everybody. This is Mark Steiner here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we are today that just that. On the program today, you're going to hear live coverage from the funeral starting at 11 a.m. Right after the 10 o'clock show, I'll be staying in to anchor with some of my guests as we have a field in the team there. And this weekend, our team here at the Mark Steiner Show took part in the demonstration around the death of 25-year-old Freddie Gray, who died of a spinal cord injury in the hands of the police on Sunday, April 19th. We'll be presenting some of their audio that they made, and also online soon we'll be putting the video that they produced about Saturday's events. We begin our program with an analysis and stories on Saturday's Justice for Freddie Gray protest, and then we go live, as I said, to the funeral of Freddie Gray. Before we get to all that, I want to share with you something that happened over this weekend as we go into this conversation with our guests. We're going to share with you one of the recordings made by our producers here on the Mark Steiner Show. This one is of the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church as he was addressing the protest on Saturday.
Our tent is so wide, family, that when you look around, you see really the vastness and diversity of this city. Right. And we all here together.
Yes.
We may not agree on everything, but guess what? You don't have to agree on everything to work together on something.
Yeah.
You don't have to agree on everything to work together on something. And here's the something we agree with. Police brutality in Baltimore must stop today.
Yeah.
We agree.
Now you say, now you don't have.
You might call God by different names. You may not pray at all. You may be from the east side or west side, up the hill or down the hill, but we agree today, no matter your age, no matter where you're from, we agree in this moment that we need to, as a community, police the police because they cannot police themselves. We're going to mobilize, family. We know it's been a full day, but look at this. Look at this. Many of our ancestors suffered for 400 plus years. We can wait a few more minutes. It's all right. I cleared my calendar today because I said I ain't doing nothing else but working for social justice on this day.
And that's the voice of the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, who's a frequent guest on the show and one of our leading social justice advocates and fighters in this community, whose voice is always out there in front when it comes to the fight for a decent society here in Baltimore, Maryland, and in this country. We are joined here in studio by Dave Von Love, who is Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, co-authored with Lawrence Grand Prix of the book, The Black Book, Reflections from Baltimore Grassroots. Dominique Stevenson is with us. She is Program Director of the American Friends Service Committee, co-authored with Eddie Conway of Martial Law, The Life and Times of a Baltimore Black Panther, and earlier in the week was arrested at the administration. We'll be talking about that. Michaela Gilliam Price is with us in studio. She's a student from Baltimore City College and a founder of City Block. And was also arrested and did some other very amazing things during this demonstration, which we're going to hear about in the course of this conversation. Our dear friend Dee Watkins is in the studio, author, filmmaker, professor at Coppin State University, writes at Salon.com, who's written some very powerful piece. The last piece he wrote that we'll be linking to on our website, we'll be talking separately soon about, is his thesis to the city that telling the police they are the terrorists in our community, and that was a very, very powerful piece that he wrote. Raleigh Hayes joins us by phone for a few minutes. He's a member of Baltimore Block, one of the founders of the Algebra Project, and welcome to have all of you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can email us at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Jump onto our Facebook pages. There are things there I'm going to read. The people have written in, 410-319-8888. Raleigh, let me just, and I know you only have a few minutes because you're at work, and congratulations on your new job, but let me just ask you very quickly about what happened the other night. So when I texted you and a number of others to make sure people were safe, we had left and were somewhere else when nightfall broke. And so talk about your perspective on what happened that day.
I think the audio that you captured from Heber says it best. The city was really united on Saturday. You saw people coming out from all walks of life. You saw the hood from Gilmore Homes. We had a brigade of little young people on bikes helping us block traffic at the front and shutting it down all for, you know, Freddie, and they came from that community. I think Saturday was honestly one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
And I think one of the things I want to talk about just for a moment, because it's on everybody's mind, because people who were not there, people who just read the media, people who just watched television, it seemed, when you look at the news, the only clips they played were over and over and over again were the scenes from Camden Yards. where physical violence broke out between some spectators from the game and some people who were, may or may not have been in the march. We don't know, but I don't have those details. But that's what people are playing over and over again. And I just want to talk about that perspective and what that – because that's just staying in people's heads as opposed to the other stuff, Day?
So I think my other organizers on the show will also echo this. But one, they didn't start it. They were definitely heckled, and also in a situation where you're confronted by police that are already in riot gear, that makes the situation very tense. But there were white Orioles fans that definitely started a lot of the tension by throwing bottles, you know, using words that are not appropriate to be directed at a crowd, especially of black people. So that happened, but I'm also not going to condemn people for showing their anger. You know, we get murdered every day, and people get tired. I'm not gonna condemn the black rage. There's also the fact that there were outer counters that also helped incite, and that is also a fact. But I'm not gonna condemn those who are from Baltimore that are angry at what's going on when people are getting killed in the streets right. every day.
The media,
Davon, we'll go over here. Davon.
The media looping the images of, you know, the destruction of property. I think it's important to use that term and not use the term violence, because it more accurately describes what happened. The emphasis on the destruction of property, I think, is the media's way of preparing people for a discourse that's going to justify the kinds of violence that's going to be targeted at many of those that are fighting for not just, I mean, importantly, the justice for Freddie Gray, but also broader systemic changes, right, in terms of addressing the issue of police brutality and the undermining humanity of black people. Because the white corporate media, the white-controlled corporate media, if you look at the way that it represents us just on a day-to-day, us being black people, you know, it represents us as just being pathology, right, as being people who are inherently criminal. And so the corporate media, really, its only capacity is to represent us that way, and those scenes help to further that narrative. And so I think a part of what, and this is why, you know, your show is important in this conversation, is to push back and to let people know that the lens that is looking at what is happening to us as we were demonstrating and what happened yesterday on Saturday, that lens is from a lens of people who don't have any genuine interest in the humanity of black people. And I think we need to be clear about that, because if they were clear about that, if the folks that were covering it in the corporate media were interested in that, they would just as even if they were sincere, they would just as much show the images of the street organizations coming together, right? They would show the images of, you know, the Jews United for Justice with the Nation of Islam, right? They would show all these different things that demonstrate that there is a strong capacity in our communities to do something powerful to make a long-lasting change, as much as they would show that property damage. But they don't even know, you know, our people and know the conditions in our community enough to even do that. So I don't even really expect that much of the media in that regard.
And that media was conflicted. As I turn here to Michaela, let me just throw this out. One of the things that you saw the conflict inside the major media, too, by the way, because we listened to WBAL driving at the TV as we were driving down the street after the demonstration. And we also heard Denise Koch, and she took one of her reporters to task and told him to tone it down and said, when you use the words riot, when you're using these are not the terms we should be using. And she was supporting the march in many ways, what she was saying. And that was really refreshing to see a longtime anchor, who is a white person, a white woman, stand up and say that to one of her reporters, that this is not how we should be covering this. So you can see that this kind of things brings out the contradictions and tensions in everything. And I think that's a kind of important – just wanted to throw that out and give Denise her props for this one. So she deserves that. Michaela, I want to take – you can comment on this if you'd like as well, because I'm sure you have a lot to say about what we just said. But then I want to go to what happened with you and Dominique the other day and on. But go ahead.
So what happened at the protest was simply that a lot of the youth were fed up with sitting behind and just listening to a lot of people talk about things. And I think a lot of the kids and youth, and especially students in college who are right next to that generation of elders who's supposed to be passing the torch to us, we're tired of seeing them exploit the movement, and we're tired of seeing them just capitalize on what's happening to our black communities. And so what a few college students and then Ms. Dominique Stevenson and I chose to do was to just talk to some of the police officers. And it became very emotional. And in that moment, it became a cathartic moment for myself, where I was talking to another black sister who was in a police uniform. And I said, you know, they're trying to make this an us against them issue, right? But at the end of the day, we're both still black women in Baltimore, right? And so when I crossed the barricade, it was a sign of solidarity, that even though police are beating black youth every single day and black youth are dying every 48 hours from police brutality, that I can still respect a black woman in uniform, right? And it's a showing of solidarity that we've seen in other protests, like the Nation of Islam and the Jews against for justice, uniting, that, like, I think that's so potent. And those are the images that we need to be seeing. And she told me, she said, you need to get off of the barricade. There's no reason for you to cross it. I said, the only reason that I'm going to get down is if you cross the barricade with me and join the protest. And I think it's these images and these symbols of black solidarity that are especially inspiring, but they're not the most productive things that we can be doing. So while I don't regret what I did, I feel like there's much more that can be done than just crossing a barricade at a protest.
And that was when you were arrested?
Yes, full detained, yeah.
Yeah, detained. Mm-hmm. You weren't charged?
No.
And you were also taken in that day, Dominique, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. Largely because of the fact that a brave 17-year-old girl crossed the line. And as we were standing there, and she's right about the rhetoric, we're listening to people on bullhorns tout a lot of rhetoric. She threw the gauntlet down when she crossed that line. I wasn't about to allow her to go into custody alone. If, in fact, we believe that these folks are violent, and certainly in my mind, I do believe that the police are violent and that they're capable of terrible deeds, I was not going to allow her to be alone.
I just want to let you all know before we turn to Dee and then play this clip that the first part in a series of videos documenting the side of the protest you didn't see on local television and mainstream news, talking to members of the community in Sandtown and activists who are marching, is now up at steinershow.org, produced by my producers Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis, and editing all night long to get this up this morning and continue to edit. It's at steinershow.org. You can listen to us here and on the radio, but you can go onto your you can go watch the video anytime you'd like. That's the first of a series of videos we'll be putting up and also sharing around the country of what happened, so people can see what really happened from the side of the people who are walking and not just what the major media presents. So please go to steinershow.org. You can see on that at any time you'd like. It'll be living there. D.
I'm proud of everything that happened this weekend. And we all know that it's not old news for the media to try to portray, you know, the negative images and spin that. I mean, people being positive and meeting and talking and building and uniting is not good news. Good news is a group of black people fussing at a group of Chicago and Oreo fans. You know what I mean? The good news is people getting their purses snatched and microphones taken. But all of the positive things and all the unities and all the things that happened at the rally was beautiful. And the rage was beautiful, too, because what would scare me is a group of people not being enraged. You should be in a rage. You should be enraged. You should be, like, crazy and out of control, because innocent people are being murdered. And we have to call them innocent because, I mean, you're supposed to be guilty until proven – you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, right? So all of these victims, not just the ones in Baltimore but the ones everywhere, are innocent because they're not even getting a day in court. They're not even making it. So I don't care what any news organization says. I don't care who reports what. I know that everything that happened this weekend was supposed to happen, and I'm proud of the people that stood up. I was proud to be a part of it. I'm proud, of – everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
I'm going to read this one piece and come right back to my panel here at the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA. By the way, our whole team from the station will be reporting live, and I'll be anchoring at 11 from the funeral of Freddie Gray. A woman wrote, put this up and sent it to me on the line. I just want to read it and share it. She says, I was at the protest 1 till 6. My young daughters and I have been at 8 other protests starting in November on the issue of police brutality. Saturday's protest was a beautiful experience. By the way, the woman's name is Irene Smith. I apologize, that's her name. Saturday's protest was a beautiful experience. During the time we were there, I'm a white 40-year-old woman, 40-plus-year-old woman. My daughters are also white and range from 10 to 14 years old. The people around us on Saturday were the most diverse group of any of the protests. In our immediate area, there were fully tagged Bloods and Crips who got along beautifully for the entire week. They were taking pictures with each other, holding up signs. They were leading chants and responding to the other's leadership. We also walked next to 30 members of the Nation of Islam and several white clergy members. The Nation of Islam members stood behind our group, and when some bystanders started yelling nasty racist comments at our group, they made sure my daughters were out of harm's way. In our group were also anarchists from Oakland who talked about wanting to strike out against the police. The local residents in our group overheard and told them this was not what our community wanted. I later saw some of them on the news acting violently in Camden Yards. At one point, a member of the crowd jumped on a police car and spit on the hood. Immediately, a group of women came to the young man and hugged him and told him to trust in the process of peaceful civil disobedience. He sat on the curb and just cried. At another point, one Blood and one Crip got into a brief scuffle. The other members of the gangs broke up the fight and said, "Not today." We walked for hours, and all I saw was love, compassion, common purpose, and cooperation. It breaks my heart that everything we built that day is being destroyed by a few people from what you saw on television. But I believe that our mission is just, our cause is righteous, and our good will prevail over evil. So I just wanted to share that she wrote. And one of the things you said to me, and you all can comment on that from all your perspectives, but one of the things that you said in the room, before we came in, Dominic, was that the Bloods and the Crips have been there from day one.
I said the street organizations. I didn't name which ones.
Okay, you didn't say street organizations.
Yeah, it's from day one in front of Western District. Folks have been out, you know. And I think I agree with the brother saying here. I think that I would also question a crowd where there isn't a certain amount of rage. It's really what you do with the rage. I'm not going to criticize what folks did. I don't know what went through their minds, and I don't know what their experience with police have been. But I think that based on the 500-year history that black folks have, okay, with oppression, the fact that if they simply tore up a 7-Eleven or smashed in a police car, then folks are lucky in my estimation.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, look at the rhetoric that came out when those two police officers were murdered in New York. Cops said, "We are going to war. We are going to kill them." And, you know, like, that's their family, that's their gang, that's how they feel. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about, well, the citizens are tearing up their own city. It's a huge part of that is like a city that a lot of people don't have access to anyway. So, you know, these issues, these systemic racism issues go, you know, it's all about Freddie Gray, but then it's bigger than Freddie Gray, too. Like, I'm sorry, is it Loretta?
Dominique.
Oh, Dominique, I apologize. Like Dominique said, you know, we're talking about 500 years. I'm sorry. We're talking about 500 years of issues. So, you know.
I was just going to say, you know, I think sometimes it's also when people think about, you know, the kind of rage that people show and, you know, people look at it in isolation. It's all about where you start. So for a lot of people who are observing, they're thinking about like Saturday and what happened Saturday. But for the people who were engaged in the destruction of property, you got to think about for them it started when they were constantly being beat by police. Right. It started when, you know, the policies that undermine their ability to have quality housing and poverty. Mm-hmm. So for them, it starts there. So if we start there, then we see what happened in that instance on Saturday as a response to ongoing systemic violence. And I think the media and the conversation, I think, about the destruction of property, what it does is it obscures our conversation away from the real systemic stuff. That is the outgrowth. That is the result. The result is a lot of what we saw Saturday.
If we can just go around on that. I'll bring up that subject, Malika, then we'll go to Malik.
No, absolutely. I agree with
Michaela. Michaela.
Yeah. I agree with Davon 100% that we have this tendency to isolate these instances of racism and use them as symbols for our movement to strike against these one instances. And along with not understanding the system of racism, we're also becoming very static in that we feel like once we solve one issue, then we're done, right? And I feel like we need to start contextualizing these instances of systematic racism where black men and black boys and black girls are being killed on the daily basis, right? And that's what a lot of the students at City Block are doing. We're contextualizing that within the school system, or the organizers at LBS are contextualizing that within the legislative process, right? So we can't isolate each of these instances and leave them just on the streets. We can't just say we're going to do a protest until these police officers get indicted and say that's the end, right? If we look at every crime, if we look at every instance where a black man or a black woman has raged against the system and asked why they did that, then maybe we would have the root cause and then we could start solving from there.
Go ahead, Dominic.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking a lot about, like, okay, one, what about Freddie Gray before the situation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about all the Freddie Grays that exist? You know, this is, it's like, to me, we do tend to hone in on this one situation and ignore the fact that the day-to-day living situation for many people is dire. You know, I'm not saying that. I didn't know Freddie Gray. I don't know what his life was like. But you know what? I do know hundreds of Freddie Grays.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and I think that sometimes the fact that we ignore folks like Freddie Gray until a situation like this, when they're dead, you know, it is problematic. That we really, folks really need to be on the ground and really engaging folks in the community at this point, because they're going to continue to be there. These issues will continue to exist until we really begin to build relationship and break those disconnects that exist between folks of the middle class, folks who are living in these communities that are under-resourced. But that has been something that has really been on my mind lately. It's like, okay, what, you know, did we love Freddie Gray before he became, you know, this image of police brutality? You know, what about all the Freddie Grays that are out there right now? What are we going to do for them?
Well, Lee, you're still with us. You want to have a thought on this before we play this clip and then come back to another part of the conversation?
Yeah, so I definitely agree with everything that's been said. And I also want to hone in on this this focus on the destruction of property. Like, one of the things people cannot be upset about is, one, this rhetoric that we're destroying our own community. For a lot of those people, downtown Baltimore is not their community. Police vehicles is not their community. And destruction of property does not equal the loss of life. Like, that's just a fact. Like, those cars can be replaced, those windows can be replaced, but Freddie Gray will still be dead. All the other people that have been killed by police are still dead. And that's kind of just where I want to leave that at.
Really, just let us know when you have to roll. I know you're at work and only have a small amount of time.
So. About 10 minutes.
Okay, cool. I'm going to play this clip. As I said, my producers were out there collecting all kinds of sound and video. And this is one of the clips I want you to be sharing during the next hour and a half of the program. This is a young woman, Brianna Breyer. Do I have that right? Brianna Breyer? Well, we'll hear the name at the top of the clip because I can't quite read what it says here. But she's a 12-year-old. She was a friend of Freddie Gray's. This was her thoughts.
I have to say that the killing of Freddie Gray, it was not right. I mean, although he had a pocket knife, they shouldn't have killed him. That wasn't right. We was talking about this in school, and he used to do things for us and people in my classroom. I miss him so much. He was like a brother, and he always used to play with my sister.
What kind of stuff did he do for y'all?
Like, if the ice cream truck came around, he used to buy us ice cream. He used to take us out to eat and all stuff like that.
Why do you think that the police are acting like this?
Because, like, they don't like us and we do too much crime, so they just trying to, like, gun us. They gunning innocent people down for no apparent reason.
Do you think that it can change?
Yes, it can change. All I have to say is Black Lives Matter. And it does matter. And I think it's going to change if, like, they take Freddie to justice.
Are lots of your friends out in the streets today, too?
Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of my, like, brothers and sisters and stuff like that.
Is there anything else you want to say for the radio?
Yes, I would like to say that I miss Freddie. And even though he's in heaven, I hope he hears his message. I love you so much.
Her name is Brianna Briscoe. I mispronounced her last name. I'm going to get that right. Brianna Briscoe, 12 years old, and a young friend of Freddie Gray's. So, I mean, you know, it's young children that were out there. They felt it. They were, you know, it was like it was in their hearts and their being. They didn't have to be defined for them.
You see the bigger issue where she knows that they're killing innocent people, but this society has her already programmed to say that we're committing too much crimes. That's mm-hmm. dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's dangerous. That's dangerous. So, you know, just like Dominique said again, you know, what did we do for Freddie before this happened, but what are we going to do so police can't come in our communities and murder us, and then fellow police officers and people not from these communities become the ultimate justifiers? Like, oh, well, you know, we had to do it because of this and we had to do it because of that. And, you know, I guess another question, too, that I would like to pose to, you know, the panel or anybody else is what is more important, this city burning down or the careers of the officers involved in this incident? Because it's probably going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very quick break. We're going to come right back. And we'll come back to our guest. Let Dominique say what she was about to say. And Raleigh, if you have to roll, always good to have you with us. Raleigh Hayes is a one of our community leaders who helped found and was a leader of Otter Project and a member of Baltimore Block. We'll be right back. We're going to break here with Black Rage by Lauryn Hill. We'll be right back.
Founded on blatant denial, squeeze economics, subsistence survival, deafening silence, and social control. Black rage is founded on wounds in the soul.
Will you all say your names?
Brendan Walsh.
Willa Bickham.
And you all live around here, correct?
We live on Mount Street, yep. About a mile the other direction, South Mount Street at Viva House, Baltimore Catholic Worker.
So what do you think about these demonstrations?
Well, we've been here several times, and it has to be. There's no way to get change without getting out in the street.
Mm-hmm. We know of two people murdered right around us by the police, that nothing changed after that. And as far as treatment of people, well, like under O'Malley, there were 100,000 arrests in 1 year, and that was unconscionable.
What do you think it's going to take to change the system?
One start would be to have policemen living inside the city so that they would know people, and community policing is the right way to go. In our neighborhood, folks go around in cars, but they don't get out and talk to us. People are afraid of the police, more afraid of the police than the drug dealers, that's for sure.
You know, in front of that police station, you think everybody would be embarrassed in the city just to see the conditions that people live under right around here. You can go from North Avenue down Mount Street all the way to Carroll Park and find only about 40% is inhabited.
At the soup kitchen Wednesday and Thursday, people were talking about this, of course, all the time, and a lot of people had their own stories about what happens in the police wagon, them getting beat up, the rough ride. But they had been beaten up at Mount Street Police Station also. So it's not an isolated event.
Another one of the clips from our producers. We are here with Michaela Gilliam Price, D. Watkins, Raleigh Hayes had to go. Dominic Stevenson, Dave on Love, still in the studio. And you, please join us here with your thoughts. We'll be there Saturday, 410-319-8888. We want to hear from you. Write to us at talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages. I'll check in a moment. But if you can, 410-319-8888. Let us know your thoughts on what's been taking place. And both Dominic and then Dave on.
Yeah, basically to answer Dee's question, first of all, I think that there's more than one city here. Okay, might be two, three, maybe even four, but there's definitely more than one Baltimore. The Baltimore that often gets lifted up and projected to the public, I would rather see that Baltimore burn than to see these guys walk. I wait for the day that Baltimore will fall and that the veil will be lifted off and people will see Baltimore for what it really is, will see the poverty that somehow the news media seems to be missing as they're walking around attempting to engage people in and around Gilmore Homes. Okay, people need to see the situations that folks really live in. They need to look beyond the wire. They need to see mm-hmm. the circumstances that actually rule these folks' lives.
And all right, Dave, let me just throw this out. When you said that, this statistic is important to me. I say it all the time. I'm going to say it again. When we saw that the attempt to shut people's water off in the city, backup bills, I wrote to somebody who I've been dialoguing with back and forth from one of the local foundations. I said, but one of the things, think about this. There are 86,000 families. I'll repeat that number again. 86,000 families in Baltimore City that are home insecure, which means they live in dire poverty. You multiply that number by four, five, whatever that number is, that's over half the city of Baltimore that's living in dire poverty. And that's what you just said, poverty. Maybe
yes.
I mean, we have to not be blind to that when we think about all the things we're trying to do to develop Baltimore. Then if it doesn't help, if it doesn't change that, then it's not worth it. Yeah. At least in my book,
there's Dave. More than the harbor and the stadiums here.
Davon, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, to the point that you were just making, and I think this is a point that I think a lot of times people get really antsy about is our political leadership and civic leadership. And, one of the things that we have to come to grips with is that, the Democratic Party, and a lot of the mainstream elected officials that are in office are beneficiaries of a system where they individually get benefits from leaving intact the institutions that carry out this form of violence. An example of that is, and it was mentioned in the clip, you know, between 1999 and 2006, O'Malley presided over a zero-tolerance policy that resulted in the arrest of 757,000 people. Illegal arrests. It was 757,000 legal arrests. Mm. So there were 757,000 illegal arrests.
757,000, you said.
Right.
I just want to get the number.
This was an outside human rights agency that came in and did the study.
Right.
And so... But and so during the time, if you talk to people who were in who were reporters at the time, it was hard for them to get any elected official to speak on it in any way, that because they didn't want to challenge O'Malley, because they understood that the Democratic Party had big hopes for him, mm-hmm. and that his leadership was important to the way that the party was moving in the state. And so I think a part of what needs to happen is that we need to parlay this into substantive change of the leadership in the city, so that we can take the reins of power and be able to make the kind of investments in the communities that are often ignored. And until we have that institutional power to be able to do that, we're going to continue to allow these people to benefit financially and economically and politically from the fact that these institutions are, remain intact. It is, it's in the financial economic interest, you know, for you know, elected officials, given that the Fraternal Order of Police provides so many contributions to people's campaigns, right? Public safety is a third of the city's budget. And so until, you know, those are substantive things that we have to address systemically in order to get to a place where, you know, those folks that continue to be leeches off the people can be taken down.
I'm going to go to the phones, but Mikhail, you haven't said much in a second, so if you want to jump in, you can.
No, I just, like, I'm in complete agreement with everything that's been said, and that we definitely need to be taking into account the fact that people are profiting off of our lives every single day, right? And until we understand that, there's not much change that's going to be made. I can reiterate what everyone keeps saying, like, these are not fights that just happen in the streets. We need to understand the systems that are attached to them. And until we attack those systems and understand and infiltrate those systems, then there's no change that's going to be made.
The future is on the phone.
No
is
doubt.
On
the right no doubt.
410-319-8888. It's important. 410-319-8888. Sonia, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning.
I was really, this, I guess it's more of a question, but I'm actually taking a cultural diversity course right now at Catonsville Community College, and it is actually a state requirement for Maryland now that you take a cultural diversity course before you can graduate. I'm wondering what type of cultural diversity training is happening on the, I guess, base level when it comes to police officers. And I'm also wondering what, how minority police officers have expressed themselves, or do they feel a sense of responsibility as a minority police officer to speak out, or are they more connected as far as the police brotherhood, I guess, is what you would call it? And are they affected by the same stereotypes that I think are responsible for a lot of the deaths and the beatings and things, the discrimination? Are they also believers of those stereotypes? Is it not just exclusive towards white officers,
right?
You know, and that's my question.
I think that's a great question, and I think we can wrestle with that. I mean, because I think that, I mean, there are. Well, I won't answer that. I'll let folks in. If I agree, just I'll just jump in. But go ahead, Dee, and then we can jump in.
I won't be general and say that all police officers are the same. But my experience, a lot of black officers, they have been just as bad. It's like a gang. It's like once you put that badge on, you join a gang. And I've, you know, had my heart broken by certain black officers who try to justify, you know, things that have happened. You know, you would say something like, you know, Mike Brown had his hands up and, you know, they still shot him. And I've heard black cops say things like, well, you know, you never really understand until you in that yada, yada, yada. And it's like, yo, are you out of your mind? Are you crazy? So, yeah, I've been very, very, very extremely disappointed with black police officers. I'm disappointed with the way the situation is being handled right now by the commissioner. You know, it's an open and shut case. He's fine before they get him. They get him. They break his neck. And then he dies. Like, how long of an investigation? How long does it take? Like, to state the obvious, you know? So, yeah, they've been very, 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 you know, horrible in this situation.
Yeah. Kevin Slayton, the Reverend Kevin Slayton, just wrote in, very proud of those voices in your studio. Keep pushing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually think it's bigger than just simply stereotypes, too. And I feel like once a black officer, a Latino officer, whoever puts on that uniform, they're subscribing, whether they're aware of it or not, to white supremacy to some degree. So I think it's bigger, though, than the stereotypes. I think it is the fact that there is a segment of society that the police and many other people know that folks simply don't care about, and they feel that we can do these things and get away with it. There will be no outcome. We can run roughshod over certain communities because no one from the outside world really sees what we do in these communities. I believe that is a big part of the issue, that the way that they do policing and the way that they go into those communities is very forceful, very aggressive, and that they feel that no one is watching.
Let me go back to the phone, too, if I might. Anybody wants to jump in? 410-319-88.
One thing that I wanted to just get ahead of, you know, I think people ask the question, you know, about Baltimore. You know, you all have a black mayor and black leadership and, you know, a black commissioner, you know, and I think that just goes to demonstrate, I think, the general lack of sophistication and understanding the nature of racism and white supremacy is not just individual people being mean, but I think it's important to understand that police brutality is something that assails the humanity of black people, regardless of the individual, you know, that does the particular brutality, you know, in the moment. It's a question of a system that has a disposition towards not respecting black people and people of color. So it's important, I think, for people to recognize that because I think the narrative of a white person doing something to a black person obscures the systemic way that it happens. And so I think sometimes we need to see the black people that are in law enforcement as appendages of that system. Right. Just I mean, and that complicity is something that is about changing the institution. Right. We need to change the nature of the institution. I've often said, you know, if you think about the way, because think about the whole idea of policing, the way that it's manifested, you know, most service industries, it is the customer that is always right. But what's interesting about policing, it's almost like an outside contractor mm-hmm. that's hired to come in and render a service that the people and communities don't like. You know, and so for me, and a part of the public policy reforms we've been trying to make is for the community to have a substantive mechanism of control over the way that policing is administered, right? But it's interesting that part of the conversation doesn't happen. It's almost as if the very people that are being policed don't have the right and political ability to even go in and say, okay, we don't like the way you all are doing this. We need to do this a different way. And that in and of itself is an example of racism and white supremacy, because in what other context would that be legitimate?
Well, I think that there's no question that that's a deep part of this, and what you're describing is a fundamental piece of this. I mean, A, we need a civilian review board in this city that has teeth, that is over the police and not the police over themselves, and the A. And B, and I don't care if you are white, black, Latino, or Native American, or Asian American, when you're sucked up into that power, it's about the power. It's about making my money on the development. It's about making whatever money I have into protecting what we had to protect. And that's the system that has to be kind of changed, because that's exactly, you know, what it means. And it goes out to everybody. I was thinking about – well, I'll stop there. I'm going to get off another track here. I want to focus on where we are. So 410-319-8888. I'm sorry to keep you all waiting. Dennis, you're on the air. Then we're going to play a clip.
Okay.
Hi, Dennis. Welcome.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Listen, I listened to you I'm a product of the 60s, and so I'm close to 70 now.
You and me both.
And now I've seen a lot and studied a lot, and everything y'all were discussing, even a young lady, amazed me in what she was the way she sees things and understand things, and a gentleman also too, and. If you get the Black Law Dictionary and look under colorable law, you get a better understanding what's taking place. And these are this dictionary, your judges, your lawyers, your politicians use words of art, and which have different meanings to what we think what things mean. And that right there, you'll get a better understanding of what you're talking about and what you feel and what to be true. And so if you want to make change, you start from that dictionary. And every word you see in there, and citizen, colorable law, you understand the reason why. Because if you follow the colorable law, you have no law. You have no justice. You got orders and codes, which we can change. Now, I may get in trouble for saying this.
No, Dennis, I appreciate you being part of the show and making your comments. Thank you for holding on. Let me, before we go back to our panel to comment and go back to the phones, let's play another clip. This is a clip from a woman who lives in the community. Her name is it Cordy? Had it right? Cordy Shaw. And we are going to play not Cordy Shaw. I'm sorry. It's Miss Jacobs. I apologize. This is clip three that we are about to play. So you can, this is a woman from the community with her grandchildren.
What do you think about the protest that's happening today?
Oh, I think it's good to protest, but you just want justice. You know, they need to go to jail.
That's all we want.
They killed him.
Did you know Freddie?
Yes. He was a good person. Mm-hmm. He didn't deserve that. I'll grieve for his family. I just lost my daughter at 1502 Mount Court over there in the far in 2014. So I want justice, you know, for everything. You know, and just have peace for all color people. It don't matter. Just stop the killing each other.
Are these your daughters?
This is my granddaughter. This is her friend.
And you think it's important for them to see this protest?
Yes, I do.
Why do you think that?
Because, you know, it could have been them. It could have, it's anybody. So, yeah, these police need to stop.
Among the recordings that our producers gathered on Saturday, hearing the voices of the people in the community during this march. If anybody wants to make a comment, I'm going to go to the phones. Thoughts? 410-319-8888. Let's go to line three. I think it's Palmer. Is that right? P.K. Palmer, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing? This is PFK Boom.
Welcome. Go ahead. Well, he waited a long time, and then we lost him. Let's get another caller. Stephen in Baltimore, line four.
Hey, everyone. I haven't changed my thought, you know, by listening to all this clip about Freddie Gray. And the thing I would like to say about the violence, okay, we were peaceful. That was a peaceful march. Until, people always talk about outside element or no. There wasn't. The outside element was the people who they were drinking the bar, okay? We don't have to force them to join us, but once we start to test some racial slurs, try to act like they're more American than other people, they start to tell people drink. That's where things start to escalate. Things start to be on the edge because me, I was there. Because the media always say that media want to perpetrate like we're the one who start. No, that was the people. They were sitting in the bar, you know, the spectator ready to go to watch the game. That's why all these things start. Okay. Also, there is no fight without collateral damage. So I would just want to make that clear that we are not the one who start. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. And that's something that you all were saying earlier on the panel.
Yeah, it's like, you know, people already hurt and broke apart and feeling horrible about not being treated right, about being discriminated against, and about, you know, an innocent person being murdered. And, you know, just some of the chants that was coming from over there was just crazy. Like, people saying, we don't care. Like, it was out of control. Like, out
chants
of control.
Chants coming from
where? From the bar. From the bar and where, like, some of the other fights and altercations broke out.
Chants like what? Do you remember?
Like, we don't care.
I heard someone tell Pastor Brown to go back to Africa.
Really?
I mean, that's the kind of stuff, you know, people would say. Which
like,
is,
you asking for it. Yeah, you begging to get a bottle broken over your head. Like, you're saying, please, hit me in the head with a bottle. Like, this, you know, there's been a lot of peaceful protests and, you know, a lot of, you know, positive things going on with all these horrible situations that's happening in America. But, you know, this is Baltimore.
And one thing I thought was really symbolic was that, like, at Camden Yards, you know, to me, the fact that the game was such a major part of the media coverage and just the way people were there kind of carrying. I mean, to me, it was an ultimate manifestation of what whiteness looks like.
Right.
right? The ability to have a space that you know is protected, right? You know no one's going to come and interrupt your recreation, right? And to me, that's symbolic of the problem in Baltimore, is that you have that power concentrated to such an extent, and there are people that know that that power exists and they take advantage of it, not understanding that that power trades off with the conditions of the people that are demonstrating.
Now, I don't know how many of you were there near the police station, some of the Western District. Some of the videos that were posted were videos of the whole crowd of young people facing a line of police. We were throwing rocks and bottles at the police. Police were hiding their shields over their head, and then the police came in, and I was looking at this going back and forth. And it was right there by the Western District where this took place after nightfall. And I was sitting there looking and had a discussion with somebody because they were talking about how this promoting violence against police. I'm saying, no, you can tell me what you think about this. I said, no, what's happening here is you're looking at young people out there. The vast majority probably of these young people in that community right on the street at that moment are from that community who live there. And they're sick and tired of being harassed and beaten and arrested and targeted every day. And they showed absolutely no fear in standing up when the police were in the street that day. That was a very kind of, to me, very poignant and powerful moment. And they didn't try. Nobody attacked their corner store and looted it. It was the young people in the street facing the police saying, enough, and this is our community, we're not backing away. But that was a very powerful piece I saw that was kind of that also didn't get a lot of play in a positive sense in terms of what that really meant, what that represented, what that was symbolized.
Well, one thing that gets me about all of this is nobody ever talks about the police, and I think what is the correct context about how they're promoting violence against black folks across the country. You know, I mean, it's always flipped, you know, because a few people act out or do something or respond. It's like, okay, you have folks who want to dial back and talk about, you know, oh, they shouldn't have behaved that way. I'm not anybody to tell people how to behave, especially folks who've experienced this stuff firsthand or even experienced it, you know, secondary, because I think we are all very much impacted by it. Even folks with privilege, those folks who went to that game and had the privilege of protection, whether they realize it or not, they're very much affected by this, you know. And I think that's what really galls me, is just how the context in which some things are spoken about and others are ignored.
Go ahead, let me get that phone to you.
And, you know, and let me find one of these people and let me approach their son and break their neck. Let me murder their child. You know, let me find one of these people who have so many negative things to say, or whoever is involved in this investigation, and let me break the neck of your husband. Let me break the neck of your son, and let me snap their neck like a twig. And then what are you going to call me? Are you going to say, oh, wait, this guy, you know, he's a hero. He needs some time. He writes articles and essays, so we should just give him 2 weeks to just figure it out. You know, he's not an animal. He's under a lot of stress. Or am I going to be a crazy, out-of-control animal who deserves to be thrown in jail? Let me break the neck of your brother or your husband or your friend or your grandfather. Let me snap that neck and see how you feel about it. But it's not going to happen. And that's why you can act the way you act.
Let me go to the phones and then play this clip on the tales of that. 410-319-8888. Dolores, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning, Dolores.
I just want to commend Davon Love and Markayla and everybody that worked so diligently for the protest on Saturday, because I think they did an awesome and wonderful job. And it's unfortunate that some of the pictures that I've seen on my Facebook feed, those are not the pictures that you're going to see in the media. Of people united of all hues, of all religions, standing hand in hand and protesting some of the things that have been going on in the city for a long time. And I just appreciate the work that they do, and I want them to continue. And any way that I can help them, just let me know, because I would be more than happy to. I may not be able to march like I would like to, because my son has forbid me to do something like that. But any other time of day that I can, my son that's, you know, so much younger than me telling me that, right? But but any way that I can help you, I would be more than happy to, because I just appreciate y'all so much.
Thank you.
Lars, thank you so much for that. It was a majority. The majority of people that march were African-American. Was a march that represented the entire city. The spectrum was in that march walking to say enough is enough. Let's play this clip. This is a clip, Cordy Shaw, do I have that right? Cordy Shaw, a community member. This is a clip also that my producers collected on Saturday.
What's your name?
My name is Cordy, last name Shaw.
And you live over here?
Born and raised, that's all I know. I've traveled a lot, but I ain't traveled too much. I done went to D.C., Delaware, but I'm born and raised in Baltimore. That's all I know, and that's all I got to say. I'm tired of us, tired of them killing us. You hear me?
You all right, baby?
Yeah, I got something to say. If I kill them bitches, them bitches that sit up there and get mad if some can buy or kill one of their kids. We know where the y'all live at, too. Kiss.
Yeah, what do you think about this situation?
This situation, that's all we trying to do is get everybody together, get everybody on a piece for this black young brother that lost his life for nothing. Like, for nothing. I have done wrong before and I have been locked up, and I know, yeah, the paddy wagon rough, but the paddy wagon don't kill you. And everybody know that. So it's more to that story. And we all know that. So we going to find out. And if we don't find out, these young black brothers out here, it's going to get real. I'm telling you. I'm a Black Panther, and I'm serious about mine. Black power!
Paddy wagon don't kill you.
The paddy wagon doesn't kill you. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like I said, why is this investigation taking so long? What are they doing? Is it evidence? Is it like a scientist? Is it like, are they calling in? Like, you know, why is it taking so long? What are they, we have to wait till Friday? It's crazy. Then you're going to do it on the weekend, you know, when everybody's off. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, just God willing, hopefully justice is served. And we can collectively find positive ways to move forward and create strategic ways to, you know, help police officers build with communities. Because I don't know if you remember, Mark, when we were on the town hall, you know, the cop said, well, you got to understand, these police officers are coming from Pennsylvania. They don't understand black culture and rap music. And I said, okay, so if I don't understand your culture, it means I should break your arm? I should, you know, so we have to use this energy while we have it and use it as a force to try to bring permanent change.
Right. And what? I was just, real quick, one thing I was going to say is that some of the rhetoric that I think you heard, I think sometimes people would use that and try to justify, oh, these people are violent, these people are angry. I think it's important to understand that the people in power have no right to peace, right? Yes. And I think that's important for people to have it, to keep in mind that you don't that there's no, they don't have a right to say, the mayor doesn't have a right to say that, you know, I'm disappointed, because it is the way that this administration and it's, you know, and many of the folks involved have proliferated policies that have created that situation.
Were you about to say something, Don? Or
I'm good.
So I let me try. Can we have time for one more caller in here before we take a break? Let's go to phones here, 410-319-8888, and let us go to Hank. You're on the air.
Good, Mr. Stein.
Hank, how are you?
Here's my thing, right? We're going to keep walking, 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 right? Nobody, they look, they see us walk, but they don't really pay attention to us walking because it does nothing to affect them, right? To affect them, right? Mr. Simon, pick any day of the month slot within the next 3 months. Just pick a date. You say on that date, right? Don't spend no money except for unless you got to eat, pay your gas and electric rent or your gas, right? For 2 days. And then look in the paper and see how it registers financially to them. See, you have to make them understand where you're coming from. They only understand two things, right? One, you're smart enough to understand the electoral process. Two, you're smart enough to understand how to affect their financial process, right? We're not going to get any change until you affect the pocket of the person. Look, if you don't go spend no money at your corner store for 3 days, that man hurts. Now he has to see his politician, because his politician is now being held under siege because by the city, right? By the people who are oppressed. Right? If you do that right there within itself and turn around and look within 2-3 days and see how financially they are affected, yeah, it's going to make some change, plain and simple.
Hank,
right? You have to hit them where it hurts at.
Hank, right? I think that's an interesting strategy. I think that boycotts do hit and they do make a difference. They do have an effect. And when people feel in their pocketbook, as Dwight Pettit said, That says heavy on this program, and you hit the pocketbook is when things change in some, on some levels. That's not the only strategy, but that is, I think, an important piece of it. We got to take a very quick break. Our panel, most of us, going to stay with us. We're going to be going to live coverage at Freddie Gray's funeral. So those of you mourning in Everett, William, Beverly, Afrikaan, please stay with us. We're going to come to your calls during the course of the next hour as well. As we go this break, we are going I Have a Dream 2, Dead Prez, which shouts out our brother Eddie Conway in the song. And I do want to thank Dave on Love, Dominique Stevenson, D. Watkins, Michaela Gilliam Price, Raleigh Hayes for being in the studio here with us. And we'll be right back. Stay with us. Word, 'cause this is real. Same just stories, you know what I'm saying?